Once upon a time, there was a woman, and she was a very wicked woman. She died and did not leave one single good deed behind her. The devils caught her, and they plunged her into the lake of fire. And her guardian angel stood there and wondered what good deed of hers could be remembered to God. And so he appeared to God, and God asked the question, "Can you think of a good deed that she did?" And he said, "Father, I can think of one. There was a time when she gave an onion that had a stem on it to a beggar woman." And God said to the guardian angel, "Take that onion and extend it to her in Hades." And he did. And she grabbed onto it. And she began to be lifted out of hell towards paradise. But then the other sinners in Hades grabbed onto her. And she kicked them away and said, "Let me go, let me go. This is for me, my salvation, not for you. This is my onion, not yours." And with that, the onion snapped. And she fell back into the lake of burning fire. And to this day, she is there in torment. The angel wept and went away. This is a very hard story, but you have not heard anything yet. Today's readings from Amos and the Gospel of St. Luke are perhaps especially for wealthy people in the Western world like us, some of the most challenging texts for us to hear, because they bring to us this question: whose onion is it? Is it my onion? Or is it our onion? The story that I just shared was written by Fyodor Dostoevsky and comes from the Brothers Karamazov. Dostoevsky lived in the 19th century and was a Christian. And this story that he tells is thoroughly biblical. And indeed, the texts that we heard from Amos and the Gospel are clear representations of what is being said here. But before we get to the Old Testament lesson, I want to share a story with you. There was a woman who came to see me this last week who's a teacher. She's no longer teaching at St. Francis High School, but she had been a math teacher there. But along with teaching math, she was entrusted with what was called the Catholic Community for Caring Initiative, where high school students were given an understanding to how to be present and to minister with and to the poor. And she spoke about one young lad in this class who came from a very wealthy family. He drove a very snappy car, and he wore expensive clothes. And when she presented the material on the care for the poor, he was so dismissive and said, "This is none of my business. I could care less." He was a teenager. Bless this teacher, she continued to pursue in her teaching, and she said, "Although I don't think his heart was won over at that time, there were other students in that class who came to a deepening understanding of what it means for the church to be about three things: evangelization, worship, and care for the poor." And today the church is inviting us to think about what is at the heart of this mission that we are called to exercise towards the poor. Now, that first reading that Sean did from the book of Amos, it is not easy. It was written 700 or so years before Jesus. Listen again to these words and consider how contemporary they are. "Woe to those who lie on beds of ivory and stretch themselves out upon their couches and eat lambs from the flock and calves from the midst of the stall, who sing idle songs to the sound of the harp and, like David, invent for themselves instruments of music, who drink wine in bowls and anoint themselves with the finest oils." What is Amos saying here? The people are completely self-preoccupied with self-indulgence. Lives of luxury, not just drinking wine from glasses, but from bowls. Using the finest oils and perfumes to pamper and feed themselves. Entertaining themselves with the newest songs and satisfying their appetite with the finest of foods. Does this sound familiar? It should. I find this language really challenging because it is easy for me to live this way, in some ways making me either complacent, indifferent, or uncaring. Now, there's another verse that we need to hear from this text because it puts it all together. It's the first verse and then the second to last verse. Here's the first verse. Woe to those who are at ease in Zion and those who feel secure on the mountains of Samaria. What was Zion? Jerusalem. It's the capital of the southern country of Judah. Samaria is in the northern country of Israel, and it was the capital of Israel. So these are the two capital cities. And the Lord is saying, woe to you who are at ease. And then he tells us why he gives this woe. You are not grieved over the ruin of Joseph. Now, the Bible is kind of like a Russian novel. There are so many names, it's hard to keep them all straight. But take my word for it, that Joseph is synonymous for Israel in this context. And so something is happening in Israel. But the people in the capital of Samaria and the capital of Jerusalem could care less. They're indifferent. They're complacent. And what is happening? The superpower of the age, the Assyrians, were coming in and they were beginning to destroy Israel. And God says that out of your complacency, do not think that you somehow are going to be freed from the suffering. It will affect you as well. Okay, with all of that in mind, it gets even more intense. And just to remember, I'm just the mailman. I'm giving you God's mail. What's God's mail in today's gospel? If you think of that passage from Amos, and we turn to the gospel, there are a couple of things we need to highlight. Like the people critiqued by Amos, the rich man in Jesus' parable feasted sumptuously every day and was indifferent to the plight of Lazarus. I've said this before, that every parable of Jesus has a twist. That is something you are not expecting to hear. And here's the twist in this parable. The person who is named is not the rich man. Isn't it true that those are the names that are usually up in lights, the rich and the famous, those who have everything imaginable? We celebrate in our society people like the folks that Amos is critiquing. But here's the point. We don't know the rich man's name, but we know the poor man's name. It's Lazarus. So here's the twist in the parable. God sees things so differently from we do. He knows the poor by name. And in this parable, what Jesus is wanting to convey to all of us is an understanding that we are to have a conversion in our lives, a conversion of heart, so that we become more and more people who are able to see that nobodies of our society, those who are full of sores, those who would be desired to feed from what fell from the rich man's table, and that these people are somebody in the eyes of Jesus Christ. This is the first twist. The second is at their deaths. In the world of Jesus' time, and also in our world, it's often believed that material wealth is a sign of blessing and reward, and poverty is somehow a sign of judgment and cursing. Jesus turns this on its head. And what we're told in the application of the parable after death is that Lazarus is next to Abraham in his bosom, says another version. This is code for paradise. Where the other guy, the unnamed guy, is in Hades. Now, don't miss this. Abraham says to the rich guy, "You once were rich, but now you are completely impoverished. Because you did not use the wealth that had been entrusted to you so as to help bring heaven on earth. You used it in a self-serving and a way that said, 'It's my onion.'" The story is told of Cardinal Francis George of Chicago, who was at a gathering of wealthy Chicago-type people. I'm not quite sure what they are. They're called Chicagoans or something like that. And they had contributed large sums of money to help with the social ministries in the Archdiocese of Chicago. Having thanked them for their generosity, the Cardinal of Chicago said the following: "The poor need you to stay out of poverty, but you need the poor to stay out of hell. The poor need you to stay out of poverty, but you need the poor to stay out of hell." Can you imagine saying that to millionaires? How can he say that? Because of Amos, because of Jesus, because of Fyodor Dostoevsky. And he can also say that because there's a beautiful thing about being Catholic. We recognize that we cannot, just as individuals, live a life of engagement and true interaction with the poor. That's why the Church has told us and teaches us about the 7 corporal and 7 spiritual acts of mercy. Listen to this paragraph from the Catechism of the Catholic Church. "The works of mercy are charitable actions by which we come to the aid of our neighbor in his spiritual and bodily necessities, instructing, advising, consoling, and comforting are spiritual works of mercy, as are forgiving and bearing wrongs patiently. The corporal works of mercy consist especially in feeding the hungry, sheltering the homeless, clothing the naked, visiting the sick and imprisoned, and burying the dead. Among all these, giving alms to the poor is one of the chief witnesses to fraternal charity. It's also a justice pleasing to God." This is the official teaching of the Catholic Church. Why does the Church teach this? Because Amos did. Because Jesus did. As I was reflecting on this, I was so thankful to the Lord for the gift of St. Peter's. Because here in this community, we are seeking to put into practice the spiritual and corporal acts of mercy. We don't have to do it alone. We do it in community. For instance, our St. Vincent de Paul Society delivers up to 70 hampers a month, helps with rent, helps also with utilities and other things to support families in need. Our Catholic Women's League, and I'm going to put a plug in here, they need more help, provide funeral lunches to family and friends who are grieving their loved ones. After COVID, when we had our first funeral lunch, the family stayed here for over 2 hours. It was the first time they probably gathered together in 2 years. If you can help out with funeral lunches, please get in touch with our Catholic Women's League. On Friday, our Knights of Columbus hosted Men's Night Out. And some of you might think, oh, that's just a good excuse for guys to have scotch, maybe drink a little bit too much and a good meal. Although it is that, that's not its primary purpose. It is, of course, a place of fraternity and fellowship, But at the heart of it is the money raised in order to further the corporal and spiritual acts of mercy, like Elizabeth House. Do you know that during COVID, our Knights of Columbus completely renovated the backyard of Elizabeth House, and then last summer built a grotto, which Bishop McGrattan blessed in July. What is Elizabeth House, you ask? It is a home where courageous young women who are pregnant choose, rather than to have an abortion, to have their baby. And they can live within this community for up to 2 years, where they can continue maybe to get their high school diploma within a context of a place where they are cared for and loved. Our pastoral care team is actively engaged in so many ways in visiting the sick. And then, as you will see in the bulletin, we now at this time of the year have a program through the St. Vincent de Paul called Boots and Coats for Kids to ensure that children have warm outerwear for the winter ahead. And this is not to mention Together in Action, and I want to thank you. We are $1,000 within our goal for this year. This has never happened before, where by the end of September, we have reached our target for TIA. TIA, which is the Bishop's Appeal, is all about monies to be used beyond the parish level for the spiritual and corporal acts of mercy. And there's one last thing I want to mention at this time of the year. Next Thursday, the 28th of September, is the beginning of 40 Days for Life. The Catholic Church is very clear that abortion is one of the greatest moral evils of our modern age. But it's not just to be able to speak the truth about what abortion is. 40 Days for Life is about seeking to make a positive difference. I would invite you, if you can, every Friday, starting next Friday, to join me in the park opposite from the Kensington Abortion Clinic at 2:30 to pray the rosary. Next Sunday, if you're available, to come to McLeod Trail below Glenmore for Life Chain from 3 until 4. And then in the month of October, we're going to have two events here to celebrate 40 Days for Life. On the 11th of October, a Tuesday evening, a woman by the name of Meg Woodard, who is helping to establish something called Lifehouse, will be here to talk about this home that has been established two doors to the left of the Kensington Clinic. And then at the end of October, we're going to have some people from Elizabeth House come to share with us about the work and ministry there. In conclusion, do you see what the church is saying to us today? Do you hear the invitation? And do we have a sense of a realization of what it is to be part of a community like this, where to practice the corporal and spiritual acts of mercy, everyone who wants to, everyone who chooses to, can be involved? I want to encourage each one of us to be inspired by today's texts, to realize that this is not my onion, it's not your onion, it is our onion. And we are to help in a particular way the poor. And by doing that, help our hearts so that we will experience something of heaven on earth by generosity and care. This is the word of God for the 26th Sunday of Ordinary Time.